Welcome to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern. I'm Terry Thornton, Director of Education. Before I get started, I need to remember to tell everybody to turn their cell phones off, so you can do that while I'm going through a few announcements, if you would, please. I see a lot of familiar faces, but I'm going to go ahead and make this announcement for those that don't know. Tuesday Evenings is an ongoing lecture series that we have here at the Modern, and this season it runs through October, and I want to apologize to anybody who showed up last week and found that the Tuesday evening lecture had been canceled. Did you guys show up last week? I am so sorry. They drove all the way from Carroll. Oh, I feel horrible. I need to get your number so I can call you when that happens. Hopefully it's never going to happen again. It was a problem with the flight in Houston. She was going to get here, but she was going to arrive after the lecture, so we decided that was kind of futile. So the plan is, it's Amy Blakemore. She's a photographer in Houston. I think most of you know that. And a really good artist, very disappointed that she couldn't give her lecture. So we're trying to plan on adding a lecture to the end. We're not going to do it November 3rd because that's election day. And, of course, I know that all of you will be at the polls. But I think we might try for November 10th. I'll confirm that another Tuesday evening. And then, of course, you can find that on the website as soon as it's for sure. Next week, Willington Ryder, architect and president of the School of Art Institute in Chicago, is here in conjunction with the Fort Worth AIA competition, for which he is one of the jurors. Agreeing to extend his duties to include the Tuesday evening lecture, Willington will share his ideas on architecture today, so I hope that you can make it back for that. In addition to the lectures on Tuesdays, there are the 6 o'clock gallery presentations by area graduate students. I hope you were able to take advantage tonight of Janet Morrow's presentation titled Standing at the Corner of Art and Science, in which she was looking at the work of Nancy Graves, Jess, and Agnes Martin. And I hope you will come early next week to hear from Colleen Berry as she presents The Ambiguous Sublime, Mark Rothko, Gerhard Richter, and Via Selmans. And to project just a bit into the future, I want to call your attention to the week after next, which will be October 10th, when Susan Rothenberg is here in conversation with Michael Opping for the Tuesday evening presentation. In preparation for Susan Rothenberg moving in place, the exhibition that opens the following weekend. At 5:30 on that Tuesday, Susan will be in the Modern Cafe signing the catalog that accompanies the exhibition. So come early on the 10th to get your catalog, to get your tickets, to get your catalog signed, and then go on the graduate student lecture in the galleries tour. Tonight, we are so fortunate to have Gardar Ida, We are so fortunate to have Gardar Ida Einarsson. Hey, okay. Here from New York. Gardar was born in Oslo, Norway, but now lives and works in New York. And it was my understanding that that's where Andrea Carnes found his work at Team Gallery and then selected him as the featured artist for the Modern's first Focus exhibition this season. But in fact, she saw his work in L.A. and then revisited it at Team Gallery in New York. The exhibition runs December 13th through Valentine's Day. So I'm particularly appreciative of the fact that Gardar was willing to come in advance of his Focus show to give tonight's presentation, kind of whetting our appetites for what's to come. From 2001 to 2003, Gardar was in the prestigious Whitney Independent Study Program at the Whitney Museum of American Art. Since that time, he has built a very, very impressive exhibition record, including the 2008 Whitney Biennial. From Japan to Brussels to London to Berlin to New York, this work described for the Whitney Biennial as investigations into various forms of social transgression and arguments for political subversion has quite literally covered the globe. In addition to his Focus exhibition here in a couple of months, Gardar has upcoming solo exhibitions at the Cosmic Gallery in Paris and Niall Stark Contemporary Art in Copenhagen. There was also the solo exhibition No Chaos, Damn It! At Standard in Oslo this past year. Some of you may have come across Gardar's work in Marfa, Texas, at the exhibition Revolution is a Roll of the Dice at Ballroom Marfa in 2007. Described in an Art Forum article by Michael Wilson, as a playful political ironist, much has been written about Gardar in publications such as Village Voice, The New York Times, Art Review, Frieze, and Modern Painter. And I think it's safe to bet that much more is to come. So please join me in welcoming Gardar Ida Einarsson.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for coming. I'm actually a little bit nervous, so if I stutter, then bear with me. I'm going to just run through, I guess you guys are sick of this image already, but I'm going to run through a couple of images, some installation shots like this, and then just a little selection of separate works, and talk a little bit about them, but if there's anything you guys are wondering about, you should just ask while I'm doing this. And then afterwards, of course, any questions you guys have. I just thought I'd structure-wise start with showing two solo shows just to kind of give some kind of impression of how I work, of how the relationship between the works are developed. Because when I make an exhibition, I try to think of the whole thing as some kind of installation. So each separate work is thought in relation to the other pieces that are made before and after it in time and that are placed in relation to it in the space. So this is from an exhibition actually in Norway. The two exhibitions I'm going to start with are actually from the same space. I thought that might give some kind of also insight into the work process. This is, 2007 or 2006. It's a show called Population One, which is based on this really trashy sci-fi movie about a future where there's only one person left on the planet. And for me, a lot of my work is about this relationship between the individual and the society that surrounds this individual, about people's desire to create societies, cultures, and subcultures, and also to kind of reject other parts of society and other cultures and other subcultures, I guess. One thing maybe to bear in mind is that all the images that I use and all the text that I use and all the titles that I use are found images. So there's never a piece that I've just sort of drawn from my own kind of whatever. So all of this stuff is just things that I've found the process is just looking through old books, old magazines, internet, just anything as a source of this material that I then kind of reuse and recontextualize in my work. So these are installations. I'm going to come back a little bit to the separate pieces and try and talk a little bit about them. But so this is pretty much how the space looks. As you see, the medium, it's pretty varied. The way that I work is I usually have series of work that sort of exist kind of parallel to each other. And so I will make some paintings and then go over to making like inkjet prints or these, the black kind of speech bubbles or inkjets on aluminum. There's sculpture. And so I go kind of back and forth between this media, just based on whatever for me seems to function best for the sort of source material that I'm using. So this is, I guess, kind of typical of how I like to hang things. Paintings closer to other smaller work, kind of trying to give this impression that these paintings are also about something more than just a painting where everything happens within the sort of four sides of the painting. They stand in relation to the other pieces. This this painting is based on this Russian finger tattoo, which expresses that the bear will not cooperate with the police. So the title is "I Will Not Give My Hand to the Police." The black piece in the top right is a speech bubble from this comic book called Judge Dredd. It's a British comic book from the 70s, which kind of developed alongside and parallel to punk rock in Britain, and it has this very sort of strong anti-authoritarian streak in it, and it's this kind of ironic take on contemporary Britain in much the same way that punk rock was. So they're just cut from this comic and printed with an inkjet on laser cut aluminum. This is an inkjet on plywood, and it's this is from, you know, some kind of fringe internet site about you know, kind of like this right wing nut site trying to get across this idea of limiting federal power. So this specific notice is about you know, the rights of authorities to come into your house and sort of the limitations for that. This is another one. It's an oath. Supposedly it's an oath for the Ku Klux Klan, but wherever that name would have appeared, it's just a blank, and it's so vague and fuzzy that it doesn't, it's kind of impossible to tie it to a specific thing. It just sounds, it reads like this kind of sort of pubertal, like boys club statement where everything is about secrecy and nothing is about anything other than we are kind of like a secret group. It's this painting again. There is the hand of the serial killer from the 20s, at a time when tattoos, I guess, were a little less common than today. This is, again, one of these. Actually, these, the character in the comic book that sort of speaks these sort of statements is this villain character called the Judge Death, who has decided that since only living creatures commit crimes, then life itself is a crime and must be punishable by death. So this is also him. This is a book that I actually found in my stairwell in New York. And I thought it was a pretty funny coincidence. It was while I was working on this show, and the book is called, I don't know if you can read, Problems in American Civilization. So I thought I should embrace this little chance. And so it's just framed and presented in the show. This is from another show in the same space. This is actually the show called No Chaos, Damn It, which was a written response by Jackson Pollock to a review of his work that that claimed that there was chaos present in his work. So it's actually kind of like a thematic show about Jackson Pollock. This is Jackson Pollock as a kid, actually. This is a piece called Boys in Blue, so it's kind of a Jackson Pollock denim jacket and a Carl Andre overall. This is a washed out road map from the desert outside of LA, which has been, I mean, all the sort of legible information has been washed away, so it's reduced to this kind of faux, like, abstract pattern. This is also from the same, I think something weird happened to the order of my picture, so we're going to see the larger installation shots a little bit later, but this is from the same show. It's kind of these, it's bronze casts of these studio accessories from, based on a picture from Jackson Pollock. So it's these kind of turkey basters that he would use to paint with, and beer cans, and crushed up paint tubes. And it's, the title is Fluids. Yeah, this is more of an installation shot. So yeah, you can see this is the same space. And this is also an inkjet, that kind of Pollock painting there. It's an inkjet on three pieces of canvas based on a photograph of Jackson Pollock standing in front of one of his own paintings, but he's been edited out. Yeah, this is also an installation shot from the same show. That was the two shows. I'm going to go over to just showing a little more of just like a little group of pieces that were made over the last few years. But this is just an installation show from more of like a survey show. So here the order is less. I mean, these works are from different time periods. So they're put together, of course, with some kind of meaning in mind, but less thought as one installation compared to the earlier ones. This in front is a copy of a jail table, where the point is that there are no sharp corners and you can't sort of detach the chairs to hit each other with them and things like that. So it's kind of this like zero point of design where the only thing left to think about in the design is to kind of prevent certain types of use. This is from the same show. I'm coming back to some of these images in just one by one later. This is another Russian tattoo painting. One which isn't really supposed to be so nice. it's usually forcibly applied, and then to prevent people from removing it or changing it. This one is even worse, and it's also forcibly applied, so if you try to cover up this one by filling it in, then it just gets even worse. this one is maybe familiar. The only thing I've changed is the colors. So again, what's important to me is to sort of to create this kind of catalog of sort of a certain type of visuals that seem familiar, but that maybe also create this almost like paranoid narrative that sort of mix all these images into each other, like from a historical flag to, you know, a comic book strip, to create this just kind of paranoid narrative of images in a way. This is from one of those installation shots earlier. All these are found images. This one is from a manual for how to protect institutions against, or for how to respond when someone calls in a bomb threat to your institution. This graphic design is the graphic design it was in. It looks completely like a Lawrence Wiener piece, and I don't really know why. But for me, one of the funny things was that it sort of starts off in a kind of very straight and pragmatic way, and then it seems to turn into this almost existential questioning: why are you doing this, and who are you? And so. this is vinyl wall text, so it's just straight on the wall. This was also in one of the installation shots earlier. This is just an inkjet print on paper. It's from a biker magazine from the early 80s. Actually, for some reason, interestingly, this Scandinavian law journal emailed me about this image a couple of weeks ago, wanting to put it on the cover of their law journal, which I thought was pretty funny. Here again, some local flavor. This is it installed in a museum in Norway. It's a museum for this sculptor who made his work mainly, let's say, between the 20s and the 50s. And it has this, there's a sort of latent violence in the work of this sculptor, which I thought I kind of refound in the sort of language of this flag. So, it was intention to create some kind of meaning in the juxtaposition between these two. You can see a little bit of this guy's work in the back there, these kind of muscular types doing some sort of physical labor over there. This is from London, outdoors in London. It's painted bronze. And it's based on this American World War I poster of kind of like from World War I, but an anti-German poster depicting Germany as this gorilla wearing one of those like Prussian helmets with the point on top. And this was his weapon, a big club that says culture. And this is again like a little print. It's a photo from this group in the 70s called Aryan Liberation Army. They would rob banks wearing masks of American presidents, and their run of sort of bank robberies / political activism ended when the leader of this group was arrested for prostitution dressed as a lady. That's kind of the end of that. these are again inkjets on paper. They're images from these manuals from the 70s of for police officers and sort of training for police officers. So in this case, training on how to handle your baton. Here's another one showing, I guess, points where it hurts to be hit by a baton. this is a driver's license. It's also from one of these websites. It's a driver's license. Well, this is actually a confiscated one, but it's a driver's license that is not issued by a state, but rather issued by the Kingdom of Heaven. And here is an ID card with sort of a similar slant. This is a mask based on... I had a series, this is the only one I'm showing here, but I made a long series of these masks based on newspaper photography or newspaper photographs of homemade masks, whether from, you know, terrorists or student demonstrators, but they were masks made from kind of like household materials. So this is like the pant leg of jogging pants. I think that's actually kind of like a fake Adidas stripe on the side there. Also more local. This is from a motel outside of Waco. So again, flag. this is one of the first LA police helicopters. Also inkjet print on paper. This one was in one of those shows I showed earlier. This is a text taken from a book about conspiracy theories, and it's about the cult content of the Smurfs. I don't know if anyone remembers those little blue guys. But apparently their method of cohabitating can be read as kind of a cultish. I think Papa Smurf gets a bad rap in this. He's kind of the bearded guy, you know, it's always the cult leader. this is from just a little photographic print. It's from a Walt Disney World War II propaganda movie. And this is the FBI. Well, it's a redrawing of the FBI sketch of the Unabomber. I thought it was kind of funny because it really looks like pretty much anyone except for the Unabomber, because it doesn't really look like him at all. this is an outdoor piece that I did for Biennial in Istanbul. And, well, you can't really see from this photo, but it was on the rooftop of this kind of rundown apartment building in this valley in Istanbul that traditionally was inhabited by thieves and prostitutes. this is actually taken from the first Scarface movie, not the Pacino one. And I thought it was my intention to make it this almost like positive. I mean, in the movie, it has this kind of tragic character because it starts in actually both the Scarface movies, it becomes kind of the start of the downfall of this character, but it also does have this pretty likable, positive content. So that was a little bit my intention there. And then right now, it is in a completely different context on top of a building from the 1700s in a museum in Denmark, which I thought was an interesting shift of context. Back to painting again. These are, there are actually a few more in this series, but it's a series of paintings that are based on a new edition of a new series of editions of Albert Camus books. And I thought it was kind of funny how they had taken this kind of recent history of painting and turned it into graphic design. And so I'm kind of turning it back into painting. And with a lot of my work, I kind of try and have this relationship between the title and what there is to see that kind of toys with that relationship. I think in some of the Frank Stella pieces, for example, it's pretty funny how the work is just supposed to be flat and empty, and then there is this wildly narrative title. So in this case, it's the plague and the fall and the myth of Sisyphus, and etc. This is from the Whitney Biennial, and it's a little group of four pieces. All the way in the back there, on the right side, is a little photograph. So you can't really see so well, but the photograph is from a funeral parlor in New York, and it's this handwritten sign written by the owner of the funeral parlor that says, "No hanging out in front of funeral parlor unless attending funeral services." So I didn't know that was a popular pastime, but the trolley is a kind of trolley that's used at airports to block off runways. If something happens and you need to just sort of block the runway off in a hurry, then these little trolleys are usually used. The inkjet on plywood is the cover of a book about violence towards police officers called Blue Target. And then the painting is another Russian tattoo. This is a light box. This little collection of letters is used a lot in tattoos and things like that, and it's supposed to have two meanings. The original meaning is all cops are bastards, but then if questioned by cops about it, the secondary meaning is always carry a Bible. This is another light box again, taken from a comic book. I guess this is always a pretty current statement, I guess. Light box and painting together again. Again, another Russian prison tattoo. And the light box is another book cover, actually. This is kind of a semi-public. It's a little hard to see, but this thing is actually pretty big. I'm still pretty bad with feet. I guess it's like 18 feet tall or something like that. And it turns around. And it's taken from the original Dirty Harry movie. In the opening scene of Dirty Harry, there's the bad guy's a sniper. And one of the scenes that sets up how impossibly evil this guy is that he shoots out some letters on this Jesus Saves sign. Paintings again, five paintings. The title is Five Words, and it's again kind of a similar thing to that ACAB. Five Words was this thing used by certain shadier groups as a thing to remember when you talk to the police. You're supposed to remember five words. I have nothing to say. Here's Mickey Mouse. This is actually Mickey Mouse taken from a book published by the curator Seth Siegelab. He published this book about reading Walt Disney in sort of an anti-imperialist light. So this is Mickey Mouse, and you probably can't really read it because it's in pencil, but inside the speech bubble it says, all I have to do to unmask him is to follow in his footsteps. Mickey Mouse was always my least favorite Disney character. I think he's a jerk. This is another painting, again another Russian tattoo. It's called My Future is the Sky in Squares. So obviously a prison window and signifies someone who is going to be spending a lot of his remaining years in prison. This is a silk screen on canvas. It's about 6 feet in diameter. And it's the title is Our Rival, the Rascal, which actually is the title of this research project that this piece is based on. And it's this project from the 1890s, trying to find shared facial characteristics of criminals. Kind of, I guess, typical of the time. So these are five photos that are superimposed on top of each other. I haven't done that. That's, you know, that was the research project. So here's two of them together. There are four of them, actually. And the four are just, they're the same photos, but just more. I think the one on the left is five, and the one on the right is seven, or the other way around, something like that. Another painting. Enlightenment means breaking with tradition. Huh? So small. Another Russian tattoo painting. So, again, a painting that sort of poses as a kind of obviously, like, late generation abstract meaningless painting. This one is called Tokyo Underworld, and it's based on graphic design in the cover page about the in a book about the Japanese mafia. This is kind of a connected piece. It's an installation view of 10 paintings that are more or less identical. This one is also called Tokyo Underworld. It's from the same book, and it's from each chapter in this book would open with this kind of strange graphic design shape. So it's 10 pretty much identical paintings. The drips are a little bit different, but each with the title of each chapter. So one is called Post-Olympic Underground Economy, and yeah, that type of title. More inkjet on plywood. These are from an online site that sells souvenirs. So again, kind of talking about a type of use of symbols and a relation to text. There are three of them. More inkjet on plywood. This guy, this is from... I have a pretty big collection of these police manuals, so this is, again, from one of those. If not the same one as the one with the batons earlier, then at least sort of the same tradition. Here's a bigger installation. This is actually in LA, of this kind of training exercise for officers and their batons. But in a way, one of the things I like about these manuals is that they have this kind of, I don't even know if they are actors or what, but they have this exaggerated policeman in them always. They really look like the kind of village people policeman. They have a lot of mustaches, and it is this kind of now almost like cutesy image of authority, but then I don't know, there's something interesting about it because it comes across halfway as pretty scary and violent and halfway as this kind of cliched, cutesy style. Here's the same piece, just in a different place. This is an installation in my gallery in New York. So again, you get some sense of idea of how the work is sort of placed with each other and... you saw some of this work earlier. That guy in the background there, that head, is that comic book character Judge Dredd. This show actually was kind of my idea was to take these two characters of, or these two ways of looking at authority, these two extreme opposites of belief in authority, and kind of talk about them at the same time. So one of the characters is supposed to be this guy, Judge Dredd, who in the comic is a police officer, but also a judge and a jury. So he travels around this dystopic future world and kind of dispenses a pretty harsh justice. The other guy is this guy called Judge Schreiber, who was a German judge who had this nervous breakdown that he chronicled. Freud wrote about him a little bit, and he wrote pretty interesting biography about his breakdown. The breakdown kind of occurs because he is finally named a high judge in, I think, Hessen or something, and suddenly has this breakdown in his belief in authority. So he doesn't think he can, you know, fulfill the duties of the judge, and this starts like a complete unraveling of his whole character. So yeah, for me, those two guys were kind of these opposite poles of belief in authority. This is supposed to be Captain America's shield over there, but turned into kind of a Jasper Johns Target painting. Is this guy again? So this is actually from this guy Schreiber's autobiography. This is a drawing of the asylum that he was in, that he kind of put together himself and printed in his autobiography. And his nickname for this asylum was Hell's Kitchen, which I think it wasn't really like that. It was a pretty posh German sanatorium, but, you know. This is like a biker sticker. The title is Oedipus. More Captain America. And yeah, here are some more speech bubbles from this Judge Dredd comic book. So you see again the sort of the way that it always returns to this idea of authority and law. This is a painting. It's actually a logo for a light company, but in this context, it was intended to be about this guy, Judge Schreiber, and his part of his kind of unraveling of his own authority was that he felt he was being turned into a female, and the way that this was happening was that God kept trying to impregnate him with lights of ray. Rays of light that would enter his butt, actually. So. Here's Judge Dredd again, the guy in front there. You probably can't really see it here, but what he says in the little speech bubble is, "And I will give them hell." More speech bubbles. Actually, I don't have an image of this speech bubble, but one guy came in and bought one of these speech bubbles, who is this huge real estate developer in New York. He owns really a lot of big property in New York. And this was pretty early in sort of the production of these bubbles. So he had all these bubbles to choose from. And the one that he ended up choosing said, "By the time you die, old man, I will have sold this city twice over." This is a wall painting, so it's just acrylic painted directly on the wall. It's a logo from, I guess, a line of Barbie dolls, but it's like the cool Barbie. So I guess she was this kind of specific line of Barbies was launched to kind of take up battle with this other dolls called the Bratz. I'm not wildly familiar with this, but apparently this is like cool Barbie, so she's like, she listens to like, you know, post-punk and eats like tofu dogs and things like that. What the cool people do. This is another wall painting, and it's based on this. It's based on the flag from some little area of Germany in the 1600s, where there was rumor of an uprising among the peasants. So the local kind of noble in charge decided to make this flag and ask them in Latin, "Why this anger, citizens?" Of course, every peasant in 1600s Europe read Latin. This is actually, these images are a little crappy because I've taken them myself. This is my last show, pretty much. It's still up. It's in Copenhagen. These images are, these paintings are, starting from the left, it's an election poster for Richard Nixon. So it said, in the white part below, it just said Nixon in this like, kind of like scrawly letter. Then the skunk there, he's a logo for a part of Lockheed that creates secret military projects that are, they're called Skunk Works, and this is actually their logo. So I thought it was pretty interesting that a secret branch will have a logo. The two next ones are both book covers. The one next to the skunk is called Class War? And yeah, in my nervosity, the last one I've forgotten right now. The little cones in front are bronze sculptures. They're painted bronze, and they're remakes of these little Japanese black and white traffic cones. It's just another installation view. On the right there, these masks that are used for prisoners of war in Iraq to kind of blind and gag them. So they're kind of just this sort of, yeah, it's like a mask, but without any holes for eyes or mouth. More installation. On the kind of end wall there, it's that's the logo for International, this truck company. They make trucks. They used to make like kind of early SUVs that were pretty nice, but they stopped doing that, and now they just make trucks. So that's just called International, which of course was supposed to be a little bit of a joke on international painting. There's that guy. Yeah, and this is actually one of my last paintings. It's also actually it's supposed to be a little bit of an homage to a friend of mine, this painter called Stephen Perino, whose images just visually look a little bit like this. But it's also based on a book cover for a book that I found in a flea market called Sex and Repression in Savage Society. So this is the title of the piece. I'm going to just end up with this project that I just finished at a school in Norway. I was asked to do like a public art piece for a high school in Norway. And I wasn't really so super into it, so I thought I might as well just make a proposal that was really just what I wanted to do. And for some reason, they kind of just went for it. So... This is a wall painting. It's from one of those police manuals again, and it's showing you how to stand when you hit with your baton. So this was made into a wall painting in the stairwell of this high school. I only have two. I don't have the last one, actually. And then these four sentences are from the last book of Philip K. Dick. I thought they were pretty... Yeah, for me, they kind of sum up this pretty interesting way of looking at authority. It has some kind of great balance between being very astute and being, of course, a little bit insane. And they actually agreed to put this up over the entrance as kind of like a school motto. So it's like that. So this is my last image. I actually just wanted to show it because that experience of having the school actually accept to make that piece made me try again, because I was invited for another school to do another piece. So this time they haven't really given me an okay yet, so I'm still crossing my fingers. But my intention was to take this photo, which is a publicity still from this British movie called The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner, which is a really great movie about this working class kid who gets into some kind of trouble. He gets sent to kind of a school for difficult kids, and he's a really great runner. And at some point, there is this competition between this school for, you know, kids who have had trouble in other schools and this super posh private school. And it seems clear the whole time that this kid is gonna win, right? And it's gonna be this huge victory for everyone involved. And all the authorities at the school he's at are really, you know, they have their hopes all pinned on him. And at the end of the movie, he runs the race. He's winning by a clear margin. And then just a few feet before running over the goal line, he stops. And then he stands there for 5 minutes and lets the other guy finish ahead of him. So I thought it was kind of it's kind of about his sort of relationship to these people and to their hopes and his hopes and things like that. So my proposal is to make this one of those inkjets on aluminum, but to make it 12 feet tall. So it's going to be this hopefully huge figure of this guy in the schoolyard. Hopefully. I think that's it. I'll take questions if you guys want. Okay.
Can you talk about how you come to your ideas? Do you have a sort of, like you said before, you kind of catalog these images? Do you have your own personal sort of filing system for all images and text, and then you start collaging these things together, or do you start with an idea and you start looking for things that fit that?
It depends a little bit. I mean, when I'm doing something like this, like a specific, like a site-specific piece, I kind of try to think about what I want to talk about and what, and so then I start looking through what I have and looking at new stuff and trying to, but it's usually a pretty vague idea of what I want. So mostly what I do is like I amass this material and then, you know, for like the shows with different pieces that go together, I'll start with maybe one piece, and then that will lead to another piece. But it is this collecting material thing, and then I keep returning to the material, and, you know, I'll find something that I really like, but I won't really know how to use it or what to use it for, so, you know, it goes in a different pile.
Do you have a specific history with law enforcement?
I think one of the reasons for this sort of interest in authority might have been the kind of shock of moving from Norway to the US, where the relationship to, you know, community is pretty different. And I also moved here on the day before September 11th to New York, so that might have some sort of, you know, my experience of, I mean, I'd been here before and I'd been here for like, you know, extended periods before, but I really like my period of living in New York was that whole aftermath of that. So I actually never really even thought that that had influenced the work, but I think it might be safe to say that it has. Yeah, kind of. I mean, I wanted it to be something like that, like a physical object that was associated with, yeah, exactly, with boarding up. And I also liked that plywood was this, I mean, yeah, I didn't show any work that, but I've done a lot of work with duct tape as well. It's this very, like, sort of simple material that you will find reused in a lot of circumstances where, you know, it's all about, like a cheap, easy-to-use material. And it was also, of course, I mean, with all the work, there is some kind of relationship to, like, art, right? So it was a little bit, again, like a relationship to, like, an art object, to, like, the, I mean, the Charles Ray Plank pieces, like, kind of a pair here and there. And so there are certain things like that as well. And also, you know, if I did them all on paper, it would be very...
Okay.
Well, I mean, certain of these decisions, I think, are, like, aesthetic decisions. I mean, any kind of language of authority has a certain aesthetic to it and needs to be, in a certain sense, enjoyable. So there is something of that in there. The reason for most of it being black, I mean, it usually looks black and white, but it's, I mean, it's just black. It's black on, like, a pre-primed canvas, or black on a white piece of paper, or black on wood. So it's just taking this image and making it like a shadow of itself, or just like a straight copy of itself, or something like that. But I think I've become a little more, I mean, I came to art through, like, conceptual art and institutional critique, and then when I went to this Whitney program thing, they're very, like, afraid of aesthetics in a way. Even though, of course, all that work also is very obsessed with aesthetics, but I was always feeling super guilty about it, and I think I'm kind of learning to be a little more okay with them. Yeah. And I really like that part of it, like the actual hanging. Like, for me, that is a really fun part of it. Maybe the most fun part, actually. Well, I mean, aesthetically, it does relate a lot to that, and it tries to also talk about that as a sort of language of authority, to talk about, like, the art institution as some sort of language of authority, and I like to also kind of, maybe that's a little childish, but I like to set up this kind of situation in which a lot of the work can be seen once and completely misunderstood. You know, if you see one of these paintings, we're like, okay, like, who would make a painting like that today, and then move on, you know? So, yeah.
I noticed on a lot of the logo type, clean cut stuff, there was a lot of drips.
Yeah. Yeah, with the paintings, I kind of, a lot of that's just kind of fake, you know? Some of it comes from, like, I mean, I'm obviously not a great painter, like, technically, you know? So, I kind of wanted to keep the drips there in order to make clear this transition that it was presenting itself as art. Like, now it's a painting, and this image, like, in the interpretation of the image, part of the interpretation has to be that it is a painting now, you know? So.
It gives it life.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it sort of points to this act of it being painted. Well, that's the intention anyway. Yeah.
Your piece in the Whitney Biennial, like, did that come about where they picked it and put it there, or did you have a corner, like a spec, and you said, I want to put this piece there and that piece there? I mean, did you make a lot of things and then show up in the space and kind of work it out then, like, improvisationally, or how do you deal with all the different, you know, because you've got a lot of things you're...
Yeah, usually, you know, I do that a little bit. Usually I'll come into a situation with a little bit too much work. Just because I like for there to be a lot of free space, and I that's kind of part of my whole hanging thing. But that really falls apart if there isn't enough work. So I usually try and have a little bit too much. In the case of the biennial, just because of the process of that, I guess, I didn't have any extra work. They were pretty cool about like letting me do what I wanted, but I just had to I had to introduce it to them pretty early and say, okay, I want to do this group of pieces. And then there was some kind of last minute, like just moving about, but the group of works was pretty set early on. But if I can help it, I like to make a little bit extra work and then sort of take it away last minute. Yeah. I hope so.
In your installations, it was kind of
that way too. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, for me, that's something that I really want. I mean, I always think that I want the work to function over time in a way. That's stupid. I want the work to function so that you can see a piece and then have some sort of idea of it. Then if you choose to kind of take a look at the title or spend a little more time with it, it'll kind of open up a little bit. And hopefully also when you see other pieces, maybe later or next to it or something, it will start to kind of give more. That's what I'm hoping. And I'm also always hoping that there's, for me, like there's some kind of humor in all the work that really doesn't get across so often, but that's one of the things that I hope like comes. Thanks. I was very nervous, so thanks.